That is the area of the monument that is most targeted right now. There is like three lawsuits that are targeting those late successional reserve forests through these logging companies. And so that is the type of thing when we talk about biodiversity and we talk about these elevational diversities and different habitats where these different organisms can live, that is what's at stake when we look at rolling back these, you know, these expanded borders, is those little pika populations that we didn't even know existed until the expansion.
If folks up here in Portland wanted to weigh in on this, what would be the best way to do that?
When Secretary Zinke releases his review of all the monuments, there's certainly going to be some action points there, I'm going to assume. I know that you can sign up for our newsletter at cascadesiskiyou.org. There's probably an opportunity to keep calling your senators, keep writing those letters to the Department of Interior and just telling them, we love our monument, keep it as is. And we'll know here in a few weeks what the next steps can be.
Great. Thank you so much. I've been speaking with Shannon Brown with Friends of the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument. And Shannon, have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
For KBOO Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman.
The time is 6 o'clock. Up next, Rose City Native Radio, and you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first annual Pan-African Festival of Oregon on Saturday, August 12th at Pioneer Courthouse Square, Portland. The first Pan-African Festival features entertainment, African food and clothing, informational booths, panel discussion, and more. The goal beyond that is to celebrate and illuminate the hidden treasures of the Pan-African community in Portland. Again, that's the first annual Pan-African Festival of Oregon on Saturday, August 12th at Pioneer Courthouse Square at Southwest Yamhill Street between Broadway and 6th in downtown Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Books and Records! Books and Records! Come on down to KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th, noon to 6 p.m. at Cider Riot. There will be fabulous books, DVDs, CDs, and vinyl at ridiculously low prices. It's a fun community event that benefits your favorite community radio station, KBOO. Again, that's KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th from noon to 6 at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to a digital indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City Native Radio.
Can you tell us an Indian first then?
Good evening, Portland. This is DJ Yellow Horse. You're listening to Rose City Native Radio here on KBOO. I am so happy to be here. This week, we got Jack up in the studio. It's not just me, so you don't have to hear me ranting. Isn't that wonderful? But we got great music for you, some poetry and discussion later on, and I can't wait for you to hear this song once again. This kick has been happening. This is the third week in a row I am starting out this show with This Is the Town by Antoine E. here on Rose City Native Radio.
Facts, boy. I've been off the map and I've been working. I've been doing me, y'all been lurking. I've been feeling good and y'all been hurting. Y'all can say I can't do this. Keep it really, really do this. I'm a runner, not a hitter, through to make a bit of winning. Every time I'm in the city, got a city moving heavy. How to think I'm really gonna stop now? I don't know another person get into the chat and keep it humble after getting hella high. Wow, I'ma do me with it, living the movie bigger and better than the previous shots. Can't stop and it won't stop. And an old box always gonna feel better than the tie, so don't tie now.
I don't even really need a call sign with me. I can get it poppin' in my hometown city. I don't even need to go and boast about anything so loud. When I leave, I take the whole town with me.
Give me the light, give me the go. Yo, give me the mic, give me the show. Yo, give me the life, give me the dough. Yo, give me the right time and I blow. Woo. Cooking and eating, I'm solo and creeping the top of my cleaning, I guapo. But 100 of the others get lost in the fame in the bottle. Oh, I know that there's some lows, I know. But I'm a different type of struggle on this open road, and no.
I don't even really need a call sign with me, yeah. I can get it poppin' in my hometown city, yeah. I don't even need to go and boast about anything so loud. When I leave, I take the whole town with me, yeah.
That was the show with Antoine E. I am not going to be over that song for quite some time, so I'm sorry that you had to hear it, but not sorry because it's a great song. Ah, so good. Okay, up next we're going to be listening to Cody Coyote with Northern Lights.
Ani Mi kwetch mshomes. Mi kwetch nukumes. Mi kwetch gitchi manitou. Mi kwetch. Mi kwetch. Mi kwetch.
Before they would doubt me. Knew nothing about me. Stuck in the limelight. Darkness around me. All that's around me. Voices that out me. Now I gotta shine bright. So they can't live without me. Who's not ever gonna have a hater? Sober now, living life like a picture. Who's not ever gonna have to wager? It's over now, me quench to my creator.
We are here, we are here.
Tell me,
son,
could be whatever you want.
Yeah.
No limits to control you.
Nah.
So do it all from the heart.
Mm.
There will always be a hater.
Hater.
Wherever you go.
No
one ever said it's easy.
No way.
It's a rocky road. I'm the one that you love, one that you feel when I'm moving up. VQ in the room, better loosen up. Making moves for the crew, no one's playing us. We work so hard to make a hater blush. Fade from the hate and line a faker up. Peace for the love, son, I raise a cup. Give thanks to the creator for raising us, yeah.
We are, we are, yeah. We are.
We
yet be believing. Vision quest up in the house, telling like a reason. These reasons are meaning. Couple things that I think when I'm seeing. Everybody gonna rep with the feeling. Gotta catch a check for your damn well-being. I'm seeing fruits of my labor. Gotta swing fast, wanna make it to the majors. No ceiling, shine like a laser. Don't got time, say goodbye to the haters. Put it down from the underground, bound with the sound so fresh. North to the east, cross Canada's best. Take your time to address. Cody Coyote, your vision quest. What's next? We blessed.
We are, we are, yeah. We are, we are, yeah.
That was Cody Coyote with Northern Lights. Hello, hello. What, you thought I forgot about you guys on this beautiful Thursday? So, sitting in here, DJ Hilo Rubber Monster with DJ Yellow Horse, chilling on this smoky Thursday. We got some fire beats for you. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be making fire jokes. Coming up next, we got this hot beat. It's Snotty Nose Rez Kids with Johnny's Teeth here on Rose City Native Radio.
Man, the Cowboys always win.
The Cowboys don't always win.
Yeah, they do. The Cowboys always win.
Look at Tom Mixon.
What about John Wayne?
Johnny,
he was about the toughest cowboy of them all, isn't it?
Johnny, you know in all those movies, you never saw John Wayne's teeth?
Johnny's teeth.
Not once. I think there's something wrong when you don't see a guy's teeth.
Johnny's teeth, Johnny's teeth. They took all the land and they want it for free. We barely eating, they're having a feast. It's my turn to speak, I'm unleashing the beast. I'm the man of the hour, the mic in me proud. They're shutting us down, I'm coming back louder. I'm sick of your lies, you fucking cowards. You wanna talk power? Let's talk about ours. We voted you in and we made you the man. This ain't a brand, it's Indian land. Take a look at who you represent and off your corporate presidents. Give up the prime, you're a minister. As a matter of fact, you're a visitor. I'm known to snap and overreact. I'll flip from the back like prisoners. You're driven by greed. Lock your doors, get rid of your keys. Hide your kids, get off the grid. Johnny's home and he's trying to get in. He's settled in, he's living off credit. You think we don't know, man, we get it. Johnny boy, I see you walking out the dentist. Johnny's grills,
Johnny's grills.
They made of gold, no stainless steel. With a house in the hills like Uncle Phil. Are we stuck in the red, so no frills? Can't afford the bills, that's too real. Stick a knife in your back and that's how it feels. Life's too short for cheap thrills. He the man in the suit and he's dressed to kill. He's out for blood,
Dracula.
Black blood, they extracting it. I'm talking about the blood from my neighbors, man. You ruined the land with black sand.
Look at the lamb and you've heard it enough. You're killing no people, you're fucking them up.
Oil money ain't distracting us. I'm done with you throwing that cash at us. No pipeline,
no problems.
No tankers,
no problems.
Off Cambridge, off Kinder Morgan. No means no, you know the motto. Pipe through a land, man, you wish. A little bit of paper ain't worth the risk. All I need is clean water and fish. No means no, what the fuck you miss?
What you miss?
Our rivers are this nation's veins. If the pipeline ever come away, I pray to God that they never break.
Never break.
Cause then the real savages come out and play. Johnny's teeth, Johnny's teeth. They took all the land and they want it for free. They took all the land and they want it for free. They took all the land and they want it for free. So take a bow for Pete's sake. All they crooked, all they straight. For all we know, there's nothing there. Goodness great, look at Johnny's teeth. Johnny's teeth, Johnny's teeth. They took all the land and they want it for free. They took all the land and they want it for free. They took all the land and they want it for free. So take a bow for Pete's sake. We know the drill, you're a freaking snake. Like your grill, we know you're fake. Goodness great, look at Johnny's teeth.
Johnny, Johnny, Johnny's teeth. No peace.
No justice, no peace, peace.
Johnny, Johnny, Johnny's teeth.
Johnny, Johnny, Johnny's teeth.
No justice, no peace.
No justice, no peace, peace.
I don't know more.
I don't know more.
This for the fam that came before us. What is freedom? I don't know no more. That's this shit that made me sick to the core. Government don't give a fuck about us. They keep us at the bottom of the mud. They take our land and tell us to be happy with the piece of land that they gave us. Ish. We're all legal, we plead the same.
We plead the same.
Freedom
was before Columbus came. And I ain't trying to play that blame game, but try to tell lies to the ancestors that's in my veins. Cause women lie, men lie about the lives that quickly died from every tribe, but we still survived. You can never take my pride, cause I reside from the side that suffered from that genocide.
I don't know more, we bulletproof. If you want the truth, come see the source. Can't drink tap water cause the man trying to see how much oil he can export. Try to make another treaty just to get his foot in the door with fake apologies, believe me. I stand with, I don't know more, the trees, the water and land, all of the beings that need our abilities to stop the machines that's trying to leave marks on our beautiful queen, Mother Earth. They abuse her like they did to us, what good is it worth? So here we stand to fight for our land for better or worse, till we're the last breathing. Man, we've been surviving every season. And best believe that we ain't never leaving. They call us First Nations for a reason.
Indeed.
That was the Indian Car remix with Keith Cicola. And before that, Snotty Nose Rez Kids with Johnny's Teeth. Coming up next, this is Dio Gandhi with Indigenous Lyricist here on KBOO Portland.
This goes out to the Haudenosaunee, otherwise known as the Iroquois. And the all my indigenous people. Those that know where they come from, and those that don't.
Little bit, but where I come from, I'm talking back home, the Iroquois nations, land claims placed us on reservations, tried to erase us, confining our spaces, too much hating, self-medicating, and sedating. Yeah, I'm mad at the white man, y'all are walking on stolen land. Your forefathers are known to me as slaughterers, and fathers, mothers, brothers, sisters, and daughters. Your heroes are known to me as villains, responsible for genocide and mass killing. That's why I put up a middle finger on my hammer, throw up the peace for the Wolf and Deer Clan. I ain't a Navajo, Blackfoot, a crow. I rep the Iroquois nations for the next seven generations. I ain't a Navajo or a Seminole. I rep the Iroquois nations. I'm the Indian rap sensation. Indigenous lyricist. Come on. Indigenous lyricist. Come on. Indigenous lyricist. Come on. Indigenous lyricist. I'm a tilted and hairy, your new favorite strain. Not waiting on salvation, I don't fear any pain. Elevated, not sedated, no flight to my plane. Constantly contemplative, I fight for indigenous gain. It ain't a comeback, I ain't no pioneer. My native roots go back thousands of years, but I've been on Brooklyn stoops for over 20 years, and I still wanna clap back for the trail of tears. Don't mistake my lack of instigators for fear. I'm here to loot the narrative, abolish stricken barren. I'm here not mute to prove to you, we're looking back and staring. My ancestors, I made it through a genocide and famine. So please respect my need to breathe and chill with all the chlaring. Indigenous lyricist. Indigenous lyricist. I ain't a Navajo, Blackfoot, a crow. I rep the Iroquois nations for the next seven generations. Tell them. I ain't a Navajo or a Seminole. I rep the Iroquois nations. I'm the Indian rap sensation.
Soul shadow. Sacred black earth painted red blood rectangle. My brown blood taking down all of your white fangs. Cross paths, joints to arms. Y'all trying to erase our lives, but we got this down. Y'all tripping out here and it ain't gon' last. Y'all slipping out here and we calling you out. Y'all slipping out here and we calling you out. Even as the water was scarce, even as the mountains were burned,
all my indigenous
people,
Seminoles, Blackfoot, Crow,
Lenape,
and the Lone Shinnecock.
That was Tara Williams with Islands of Decolonial Love. And before that, Diod Gandhi with Indigenous Lyricist. We're now going to play an interview with the director of a film coming out to Portland tomorrow, the 11th, at Cinema 21. This is our interview with director Stephen Lewis Simpson here on KBOO Portland, Rose City Native Radio. Joining me today is Stephen Lewis Simpson, the director of the new film, Neither Wolf Nor Dog. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, for the listeners out there who might not be familiar with this film, can you give us a brief synopsis of it?
Well, yes, it's an adaptation of a novel by Kent Newbern, and basically it follows the story of an author based on himself who gets sucked into this road trip through the heart of Lakota country in the Dakotas by a Lakota elder and his sidekick, and sort of drawing him into the depths and the heart of the elder's experience.
And the author is actually a local Portland author, is that correct?
Yeah, he moved there a number of years ago. He had been based in the Minnesota area for many years, and that's where he wrote most of his work. But he relocated to your neck of the woods 4 years ago. I think the Minnesota winters were getting a little too severe for him in his maturing years.
So, what got you interested in producing and directing this film?
Well, he approached me, the author did. I had been showing a feature film that I'd shot on Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in a theater right next to the reservation a number of years ago, and he happened to be in the area at the time and was curious and came along and saw it. And he'd, been having approaches over many years from various Hollywood producers interested in adapting the novel into the film. And he was getting very frustrated for, these year after year of high hopes and promises and that sort of thing, and people failing to deliver. And, he was intrigued because, for the one thing, I'd, actually managed to get a film made in that area, and that really had the tone of the region and the people there. And so, he handed me a novel. It took me a while to get around to reading it. Let sit with me for a while, and then I give my word that by any means necessary to get it made. And that was over 6 years ago, so it, these things take time.
So what made you feel as if you could tell a Native American story as opposed to maybe say a Native director? Currently there is a lot of talk about people of color directors directing people of color films. So I was just curious what your thoughts were on that.
Well, I think, every story has to be, treated as an individual story, whatever it may be. This one, in a sense, is a dialogue between two cultures, two worlds, that type of thing. And I think one of the key things about it that made me the right person to tell the story was that I'm from either of those worlds. I mean, I'm not from the U.S., so all the baggage that, a lot of white Americans have going into Indian country, white Europeans don't really. We go in with a very different energy. I mean, particularly places like Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, everybody I know there has, a ton of friends from Europe. Europeans normally turn up with big goofy smiles on their faces, looking to make friends and have a good time. And, the Lakota are as good as anyone I've ever met at embracing people that way. So a lot of the baggage that Nurburn's character has going into that environment, I couldn't relate to, which allowed me to be able to depict that because I could see all of the nuance. And, traveled with the real Canterburn, and we went and met one or two elders along the way, and I could see how very different he was in that space. And because I'd, been filming there for, it's now about 18 years since I started filming in Lakota country, I had a lot of friends and understood the tone. So, the key thing was being able to be a fly on the wall to both worlds, whereas I think if I was too immersed in either, you know, either sets of characters, I would have missed a lot of the nuance. But the other thing is that, you know, what it comes down to as well is that, you know, many people had tried to get this film made and none of them had succeeded. And, you know, so very often it's not a case of why did somebody get to make a film with, you know, who, from whatever background they are. You know, often it's, you know, who actually managed to get it made. And, you know, that was the case here. Was, you know, I had the skill set to be able to make the film for a minuscule budget, and yet, you know, achieve what we needed to achieve. And as important as that, actually managing to, you know, create a structure where we so successfully, you know, distribute it, because the distribution of the film has been a bit of a miracle, because you know, I just started releasing it myself, and it's on the way to becoming, you know, probably one of the most successful truly self-distributed films that, you know, there's been, because it's something that's incredibly rare to be done. It's I'm struggling in any case studies, you know, of anyone achieving, you know, kind of what's been done here. It's, you know, we've got about eight or nine theaters in Oregon alone, you know, that the film's going to be released in the next few weeks, which is really quite amazing, really, and speaks a lot about how, you know, people are being moved by the film, and, you know, particularly, you know, Dave Bald Eagle Central performance. It's, you know, people are falling sort of mad in love with his character on screen. It's been wonderful.
And that is something that has been really interesting to see, is just the amazing cast that you have for this film, some really truly gifted Native actors. So on top of that, though, you've mentioned that you've been filming at Pine Ridge for quite some time. I'm curious how that started, because you're from Scotland, so that's quite a long ways to travel to.
Yeah, it is, but it's actually through a very direct Scottish connection, which was, you know, I'd been developing a story which partly dealt with the events leading up to Wounded Knee, just a writer, and saw in the news one day that there was a ghost shirt that had been sitting in that was taken from the Wounded Knee Massacre site, that had been sitting in a museum in Scotland ever since, and a delegation of Lakota had come over for it to be repatriated, and it was agreed upon. And the moment I saw that, I knew I was going to jump on a plane and head on out there. And, you know, within 3 hours of hitting the reservation, I'd been, you know, I mean, just literally driving in on my own. I had a local guy take me around Wounded Knee, and then to a protest camp on the border for a couple of murders that had happened that weren't being investigated. And then I met people there, took me up to Russell Means's house, you know, the American Indian Movement leaders from the 70s. And, you know, Russell was a hero of mine at the time, and he asked me to film 3 days of political meetings there. And that was literally my first 3 hours in Lakota country, and just from there, it snowballed from there. And the sort of similarity between myself and the character in the film and the novel, that the author, is that, you know, I had quite a lot of people that ask me to come around with them and film interviews or testimonies or whatever else with various people there of different ages, a number of elders, but, you know, a lot of other people just had very powerful experiences. And that became this 13-year journey to making Thunder Being Nation, a documentary I made about the history and contemporary life on the reservation. And could really truly relate to, you know, that whole thing of being, you know, committing to people that you're going to see something through like that. So, you know, although we, you know, we're very different in that sort of sphere, as I say, you know, my background's very different, energy's very different going in.
Well, I think the interesting thing about Res Bomb, which was that another film that you did, I believe on Pine Ridge Reservation as well, correct?
Yeah.
Res Bomb, and even now with Neither Wolf Nor Dog, this shows Native people in a more contemporary setting, because normally we're in buckskin or, you know, Old West style in the past. And even if it's contemporary, it's always a dramatic piece. It's always the term poverty porn comes to mind. But this seems to be a bit more empowering and a bit more realistic view of what realities are for folks on the res.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting point because, you know, I had, you know, a friend of the author saw an early version of the film, and with one of the character houses, he was saying, oh, what was that about? It was too nice a house, it was, you know. And, you know, he was not native. And then, you know, one film came out, it was, for example, an Ojibwe woman was responding to the film, and she was saying, one of the things that I liked was that the characters, you know, lived in, you know, some lived in these houses, and it wasn't just that stereotype. And sort of so interesting, those different views, because one of them had been so fed, I think, just that singular view. And it's one of the things that really, really frustrates me, because, you know, even a lot of people go to places like Pine Ridge and, you know, try to be helpful, but it's sort of this thing where it's a singular narrative that comes out of there, which is ridiculous. I mean, when I think of friends from Pine Ridge, you know, I think of one friend of mine who's, you know, from the Porcupine area, who lives in California, who's involved in business deals in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Another friend of mine who's head of human resources at House of Blues Live Nation Group. I mean, he heads the department for, you know, the biggest concert promoter in the world. You know, the person I'm acquainted with who's with an Olympic gold medal from Pine Ridge, it's Billy Mills. You know, I was in a museum in Scotland a little while ago, Instagramming a photo from a friend from Pine Ridge, says, oh, you should go see my work. My work's in there. And so when I think of Pine Ridge, I think of friends that I have from there that are excelling in the world, and, you know, just locally, but, you know, globally. And, you know, so it's many different dimensions, and I've had friends that I've known since they were little that have killed themselves and everything else in between. But it's a whole world. It's not a singular narrative. And that was an interesting thing with my film Razbomb, because it was just a love story thriller. I originally wrote it for Edinburgh. And some people react to it in a sense of, oh, but what's the cultural depiction you're meant to be putting forth in the movie? And I said, none. This is a boy and a girl who get into trouble and dig themselves out. It's a movie. And it frustrates me that, you know, Indian country can't even just participate in pure entertainment. You know, it's like anything that's shot in Indian country, it has to be within a very defined cultural framework, which nobody else is living that way. I mean, people on the res want to watch a movie that's make them laugh, it's going to make them cry, it's going to entertain them, there's going to be escapism and whatever else as well. And so, you know, every work I've done has tried to be very different in that. I mean, Razbomb and Neither Wolf Nor Dog could be more different stylistically, energetically, as a depiction of a world or anything else in between. And I love that. So, you know, I want to see teen people making teen high school comedies and or stories, or, you know, zombie movies, whatever. I mean, it should just be a complete world of entertainment. I mean, to me, there's a cultural apartheid until everyone anywhere, you know, it's just telling good stories and fun stories and entertaining stories, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems that people still have this this particular view and assumption of what Native life looks like, especially res life, and going forward with that, you know, place their perceived notions, their fantasies on that, and like, what, that's a regular house, they're just, why do they have a skate park there, that doesn't make any sense, Indians don't skate, you know, different things like that. But being able to see like a slice of life kind of film, you know, just regular everyday activities, that's what we do, we're all people. But yeah, and more of that representation is definitely needed, I feel, as well.
Yes, and you know, everything else in between. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's interesting how, you know, people put Neither Wolf Nor Dog to, you know, it's a native film. Well, it's also an old person in the lead, which is rare in itself, regardless of their background. Well, it's, you know, when was the last film anyone saw that starred a 95-year-old who's you know, share their soul on screen. And so it's sort of, I always find it interesting how, you know, that's not really something that people shine a light on that much within it. It's always through, you know, that sort of cultural lens. And I think that there's a terrible ageism within storytelling as well, within commercial cinema in particular, which I think is terribly unfortunate because, you know, people who have lived most are the most interesting, typically. So,
absolutely.
You know, that's the thing that I think is wonderful in this film. I mean, you know, I think Dave's performance is one that, you know, most people who see the film will never forget. He's that amazing on screen. I mean, he was life. I mean, I have people reach out to us in Europe, for example, in France or whatever, and they're saying, oh, you know, in the 80s, I met Dave at such and such, and I've never forgotten him. I mean, that was the impact that he had on people.
Yeah, he was a great talent, and definitely will be missed. And another question I have, I was curious, how involved was the community of Pine Ridge during filming?
Well, I mean, the thing with filming is, wherever you are, whatever you do, you're in a pretty fine little bubble. Why my filming works well there is because I have a very small crew. We just move very lightly around, so it's not like, you know, this machine of trucks and whatever else and getting in people's way and what. I've always found it incredibly easy filming there, but it gets easier and easier because, you know, to people at Pine Ridge, I'm the Resbaum guy. And so, you know, it's a film that so many people saw there and were entertained by. I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like, you know, I've had talked to friends there about films that are, you know, films like Skins or whatever else that are very much kind of, you know, about life on the res. And, you know, the thing that, again, you know, people enjoyed about Resbaum was they were just entertained by it. It wasn't, oh, you know, reminding them of their domestic situations or whatever. So, you know, that sort of popularity meant that, you know, it was much easier for me to, you know, film anywhere or whatever. But, I mean, essentially, we just, you know, pretty much everything or everyone we had was local. I mean, you know, the crew, everyone that worked on it was within, you know, 100 miles of there. And, you know, the cast and, you know, we had a few of the, obviously, the established actors came in, but we were lucky. I mean, we even had Dawn Littlesky and had a small role in the film, and her husband was Eddie Littlesky, who, you know, quite famously was, you know, the pretty much one of the first, if not the first, you know, native actors playing decent-sized roles in those movies that, you know, they were kind of always excluded from for the longest time. So, you know, he was popping up in a lot of the westerns of the 60s and that sort of thing, and they'd lived in Hollywood for many years. But, you know, she was now living, you know, about 35 miles from where we were filming. So we were very lucky that way with who we managed to draw into the film. You know, some of Dave's family were involved, and that was very special too.
So you've mentioned some of the feedback you've gotten from the film from different countries and things like that. What are your hopes that people get from this film when they see it?
Well, there's one thing I know, which is 99.9% of the audience are just going to fall in love with Dave because, you know, what I said. And you know, I think, you know, we do something unusual with the film. The film climaxes at Wounded Knee. And as we sort of got close to that point of filming, it was the last major scene that we filmed, something about what was in the novel and the script no longer felt true to the point that we were going, because everything had been so deep and so personal and so real. And so I threw away the script, and we went in And I basically said to Dave and to Christopher Sweeney, who's sitting opposite him, I want you to improvise this whole sequence. And Dave just went there. He poured his heart out, and it was incredible. I mean, it was just, you know, the whole sequence was, I've somewhat structured it in the edit, but it was pretty much as was. And you have this elder who was closer to the events of Wounded Knee than the character he was playing. I mean, you know, Dave's people were Minkanju from Cheyenne River, the people that were massacred there, had relatives involved. And so the place he could go was always going to be deeper than, and the words he'd come up with, powerful than anything I could write, Nurburn could write. And, you know, so it's this thing where, you know, when people talk about, I'm a non-native filming in this territory, whatever else, and, well, I have no qualms about that whatsoever, because Dave owns every moment of him on screen. You know, one of the differences between a novel, reading the novel and seeing the film, is the words on the page, you never know, unless you were in the room when the person who was writing them down heard them for the first time, you're never quite sure of how that was transmitted. Whereas in the film, you literally see where Dave is going in these moments. So, you know, I'm truly a vessel that way structurally in terms of the work that I'm doing, but you are experiencing that with Dave. And so I have no qualms about that whatsoever, because I have this man pouring his heart out about Wounded Knee. He is doing it. You know, it's not Mike doing. At the end of it, after filming, he turned to Chris and said, I've been holding that in for 95 years. And, you know, so for me, you know, that gives the film a tremendous cult importance, regardless of whether it's a great film or a terrible film, to have that sequence. And somebody goes that deep inside of themselves to share it with those outside. And so it's an incredible gift that, you know, Dave gave us all in that moment. And that's the time I realized why, you know, I jumped on board to make this film. You know, it was all about bringing that moment to the world. And so I think what happens about it that, you know, you can have a documentary about these events, and it's incredibly, you know, powerful, and the information and whatever. But the thing is, when you come through fiction, it's a different journey, because at this point, you know, the audience are listening to somebody they love, this character they love, pouring his heart out, and so their heart is open, not just their head, like in watching a documentary. And so it's this incredible access point. And I've had so many reports from both Lakota, Ojibwe, and then some other regions where the film's been, talking about how amazing it is, walking out of the cinema after the lights have gone up, everyone's still there. But after the lights go up and they're walking out and they look back and they still see the white folks rooted to their seats because of what it's made them feel, and it's what Dave has made them feel. And, you know, them commenting about how satisfying it was to see that, to see how that deep had resonated. That's really, really wonderful. The saddest part of it all, though, is that, you know, Dave's no longer with us to see that reaction from people. I mean, he saw the film, and he was very, very proud of the film, but, you know, he passed before it started going out in front of large audiences.
And that's a really important thing to be able to recognize sometimes, or to see, to know when to step back and to elevate that voice, to elevate those voices who have experienced it or who have been directly affected by it, and letting him just have that space to really speak from the heart like that. And that really truly makes it a powerful moment. I'm very excited to see that as well.
It's very unique, I think, in this film, because it is as true as it could imaginably be in those moments and where it goes, because Dave, the characters of Dan and Dave, you know, what Dave playing Dan, they are one in essence. I mean, and so at that moment, even Dave just into himself, it's going to Dan to a truer point as well. And it's interesting because even though it's a beautifully shot kind of landscapes and all these other things film, people often come away and incorrectly say, oh, I have a documentary to see, which is really interesting because it's clearly a narrative, but it's just because the reality of it was so deep. And so that's kind of pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's when you know that that the point got across, I guess, in a way of just being able to create that space so people can hear those voices and them coming out of it, you know, going into it expecting just to be entertained or just another movie, and then coming out having actually learned something or having an interest in looking deeper into what that was talking about. So that's truly great. So what's next for you in the future? This film obviously is touring, and like I said, it will be in Portland on August 11th. But do we have any other projects to look forward to coming from you? Or,
well, it's all a question of time at the moment. I mean, I've been 100 plus hour weeks since November just on the distribution, and that's going to take me through to, well, the entire year, and you know, I haven't had a day off this year, so it's hard for me to project forward until I've gotten clear of this, you know, world. And it's you know, but I'm constantly thinking of where are we opening, you know, what state are we going to be in next. And the wonderful thing is, in Oregon, it's going to be as available there as just about anywhere. In Washington State, it did fantastically well as well. Some of your listeners there might have gone and seen it already in Vancouver, because when we were doing theaters in Washington, we opened at the Kiggins Theater in Vancouver, and we were their second best performing film per showing in a year. And we did better than 11 of the 12 summer blockbusters at the Regal Multiplex down the road. So, you know, people in that area so embraced it. So I'm very excited to see how we do over in Portland, and we're in Corvallis right now, and it's going to, you know, all these bands and sisters and so many other places in the area. It's very exciting. But it's just a tremendous amount of, you know, work getting the word out. It's as much as anything. It's all about marketing, and I'm doing this with my, you know, my assistant and myself, not spending much, and we're up against films, and the small films we're up against, a lot of them are spending millions on marketing, and when we're in a multiplex, we're next to films spending 50-100 million sometimes marketing. And so, you know, talk about a David versus Goliath situation. It's, you know, it's you know, quite a journey, and but it's, you know, the fact that we've been outperforming many of them is down to the fact that it doesn't matter what your budget is, you know, you can't buy heart in a movie. And, you know, what we have is so deep that way. And it's something that was just gifted from all of us, you know, all the lead actors and myself, I mean, crew member, we just gave our all, we, you know, and it's all there on the screen. And, you know, so a $250 million Spider-Man movie might have all the bells and whistles, but, you know, the audience isn't feeling anything. And so, you know, we're proud to be giving people this experience. It's quite wonderful.
And that's great. I love that you're excited to hear maybe feedback on the Facebook page and to continue that conversation as your film travels the globe.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, again, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Again, that was the director of Neither Wolf Nor Dog, which is coming to Portland tomorrow. So tomorrow, August 11th, Neither Wolf Nor Dog will be playing at Cinema 21 starting at 3:30 p.m. and then next Thursday, August 17th at 10:30 p.m. And we will be posting that event to our Facebook page, facebook.com/RoseCityNativeRadio. And now to close out the show, what should we close out with? What should we close out with? I think we're going to close out with Boogie the Beat, Young Drummer, here on Rose City Native Radio. See you next week.
It is 7 o'clock in the p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland, worldwide at KBOO.fm. This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from Edgefield Concerts, presenting Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue with St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Saturday, August 19th. Trombone Shorty and St. Paul tickets at edgefieldconcerts.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of National Health Center Week Health Fair, Thursday, August 17th at 10 a.m.